Yeah, because the teacher's manual is less abstract in a way, and it explains a lot of the terminology that the text uses. Because the biggest resistance that people have to reading the course is the form that it's written in.
Mm.
And they get so busy getting caught up on the religious terminology and the masculine terminology that they don't notice that it's not giving any of the traditional meanings for any of those things. So that you're in a world where you're listening to this terminology a lot, and some people grew up with it, and what it's trying to do is give them a different interpretation of all these terms that we've heard and that we've learned. Like this this section right here, Lesson 71, Only God's Plan for Salvation Will Work. Hey, what's going on, darling? We got our snow bunch. We got our little snow group here, so we can move. It's like tiny. That's why I usually stay at home when it's when it snows, because that's where it usually is. But anyway, that's all right. I'm gonna do lesson 71, which is on page 121 in the workbook. Okay.
Anybody else want some water while I'm at it?
No, thank you.
It's the one that says only God's plan for salvation will work. So it's in the course says salvation means, you know, healing, forgiveness, right-mindedness, love. So it's saying only God's plan for happiness will work. And that's what I've been really focusing on. But this is the one I've been focusing on for the last year. And I kind of want to make sure that I keep it to the forefront going into this year. And since it's a more intimate group, I really invite discussion, talk, rapping. Yeah, let you. That's right. Since it's smaller, you know, like I said, you know, I welcome questions, discussion, talking, sharing. But the lesson is only God's plan for salvation will work. He says, you may not realize that the ego has set up a plan for salvation in opposition to God. So in the ego is the part of the mind that thinks it's separate, the part of the mind that doesn't know it's one, the part of the mind that gets into guilt, anger, and fear is what the Course describes as the ego. It's just the fearful thoughts that we identify with in our minds as being us, our separate human identity that thinks it's on its own, trying to make it. And he says that you may not realize that your ego has set up a plan for your happiness that's in opposition to God's. He says, it is this plan in which you believe, since it's the opposite of God's. Got this off. Since it's the opposite of God's, you also believe that to accept God's plan in place of your plan is to be damned. He said, this sounds preposterous, of course. But after we've considered just what the ego plan is, what the fearful mind's plan is, what the mind that thinks it's separate's plan is, perhaps you will realize that however preposterous it may be, you do believe in it. He says, the ego plan, the plan of the mind that doesn't know it's one, that doesn't know the truth. He says, the ego's plan for salvation centers around holding grievances. The ego is the part of our mind that maintains that if someone else spoke or acted differently, if some external circumstance or event were changed, you'd be saved, you'd be happy. So the Course is saying that the plan that most people use is simply that if you spoke differently, if you act differently, if some type of external circumstance or event were changed, then we would be happy. And that's absolutely the way that 99% of everybody you know look at it. It's like we all thinking that if something out there changed, then I'd be happy. If my mama was different, spoke different, act differently, if my mate spoke to act differently, if my friends act differently, if my boss act differently, if people of other races, cultures, groups, countries act differently, then we'd have this really cool, happy experience. So, and then the Course is saying that's the wrong plan. That's the plan that never works. What's going on?
I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm early.
You actually talking about why I wasn't here today.
Yeah. How do you hear about the class?
I come to church on Sundays.
Oh, okay. Cool. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, welcome. What's your name?
Chris.
Hey,
Phoenix.
Okay. Well, welcome. Yes. Welcome. Yeah.
This is Phoenix Christopher Bob. Americans call me Chris. Europeans or internationals call me Phoenix.
Oh, cool. All right. He says, thus the source of salvation or the source of happiness is constantly perceived as outside yourself. And each grievance you hold is a declaration and an assertion in which you believe that says, if this were different, I'd be saved. If this were different, I would be happy. So the change of mind necessary for, I'm going to use the other term for the course, for salvation, which is happiness. The change of mind necessary for happiness is thus demanded of everyone and everything except yourself. So people believe, of course, there needs to be a change of mind in order to have happiness, but that change of mind has to be someone else, anybody else, except me. Everybody else needs to change their mind except me. So the Course says the role assigned to your own mind in this plan then is simply to determine what other than itself must change if you are to be saved. So the role that I've assigned to my mind is I want you to come up with everything that needs to change except me. I want you to come up with everything that needs to change in my mind except me. That's the plan. That's the plan of the ego. So that's the course. That's the role that I've given my mind. I want you to come up with everything around me that needs to change except for me. And he says, according to this insane plan, any perceived source of salvation is acceptable provided that it won't work. So the part of me that doesn't love me is going to always focus on trying to make myself happy by choosing every single thing that does not actually work. So I'm going to, and the thing, okay, so what is he saying? The thing that doesn't work is believing that somebody else's mind needs to change except mine. That is the plan. So anytime I come up with a plan that has anything to do with anybody else changing in order for me to be happy, even if a person changes for me, they actually aren't helping me. They're actually reinforcing the erroneous thought system. That's funny too. You know, I upset you in some way, then I'm going to change the way I am for you. That might make you feel good, and you might make yourself feel peace about that, but what I'm getting is that what I've just done is reinforced the erroneous idea that for me to have peace, everybody else around me has to somehow change or give in or act the way that I want them to act. So the people who allow me to control them in some way are just as much reinforcing my unhappiness as the people who don't. As a matter of fact, the people who don't cooperate in a way are actually helping me more because they're making me have to choose to go with them for my peace rather than believe that my peace is based on their behavior, the way they act, or what I want them to do. So he says, this ensures that the fruitless search will continue, but the illusion persists that although this hope has always failed, there is still grounds for hope in other places and in other things. In other words, another person will yet serve better, another situation will yet offer success. He says that's the ego's plan for salvation. He said that's the ego's plan for happiness. Anybody got any thoughts about that?
Yeah. Be grateful for the graders.
For the what?
The graders. The people that grade on you.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like when you're on a spiritual path, at least what I noticed, that when you first get into it and you get in touch with that idea that thought is created and you can create stuff with your consciousness, it seems like you'll go through this initial phase where almost anything that you think of or you really focus on or you really put your energy into, you create it, or it looks like you manifest it. And I think that's just to get you in touch with the idea that your thoughts are created. Then you hit this other phase later where it looks like you can't kill nothing and won't nothing die. where you're perceiving and you're visualizing and you're saying you want it a certain way, and it looks like everything is happening just the opposite of the way that you think you would like it to happen. And I think that's a time when you're working on this idea of I'm going to take it to my own mind, I'm going to change my own mind, I'm going to change my own perception, I'm going to change my own interpretation. And if I change my interpretation, then I'll give myself peace. Because my peace is going to come from my interpretation of the situation and not from necessarily the situation having to change. I've gone through a long period of that one where I've been where the universe presented me with, okay, Earl, What you got to change is your interpretation. You got to re-perceive what's going on. Don't expect the out of the shift until you change your interpretation of what's happening. So, throwing this out to the group, what phase of learning do you think you're in right now? Are you in a phase right now where it looks like the things that you focus on, you manifesting, or does it look like you're constantly being presented with situations where it looks like you need to change your perception in order to get peace in the situation, because the situation itself seems like it's staying pretty consistent?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Robin?
Nothing much.
You made it, huh?
The weather.
Yeah, I know. I hear you.
Let Robin answer that question first. Both is my answer, for sure.
Mine's the latter, too. I've been working on the mind and that, and it's like, well, how do I change my mind? And the more I try to, I use affirmations or, you know, love is, I can't think of what it, what, you know, but I keep using those terms, but nothing seems to be changing in that. So I'm thinking, where is my mind here? How am I going to change my mind? That's my question right now.
By doing the workbook.
Yeah, and I keep doing that.
You know, it's really about reminding yourself of the truth. It's the key to getting the Course in Miracles stuff to work is the workbook lessons. Most people love to talk about the theory of it and focus on the text and focus on the teacher's manual and stuff like that. But it's not until you start to apply the ideas in the workbook, fully realizing that it's through repetition and hearing the truth over and over again that you begin to see it happen. And so what happens is that most times people will say some type of a truth two or three times, and then they'll like wait for the doors of heaven to open up. But yet they'll say 20,000 negative untrue things all day long, and then they'll say only God's plan for salvation will work. And then they might say the lesson one time. And then want to see the shift happen. But what I've seen over and over again is that it doesn't matter whether I believe it or not. What I found is that if I have the willingness to focus on the idea, and I have the willingness to use the idea whether I believe it or not, that's when I see the change happens. Believing it is not important. What's important is the willingness to have to do the symbolic willingness to show that you're willing to have a different experience is what the Course is saying. You know, it's like it says really all the healing that's happening internally is going to happen through God anyway. And it's just us pretending like we're the ones in charge and that we're the ones that's going to change everything through our diligent hard work. That's just a way to entertain our ego. That's all. I call it ego entertainment. So we sit down and we pretend like we're going to figure this all out and then we're going to do it all by ourselves. But really the truth is every time I set my workbook lesson, all I'm doing is reminding myself of the truth. And that's what it's asking us to do. It's asking the truth. Like, whether you get upset or don't feel upset, the truth is if you believe that if something outside of you makes you has to change for you to be happy, that's the wrong plan. That's what it's trying to get me to get, is that even though you may be addicted to that plan, even though you may find yourself doing it all day, do you know if you keep telling yourself something doesn't work, your mind will eventually want to stop using it because you've already programmed your mind since you were a child to not do what doesn't work? But what most people do is they get into the bad and good and the right and wrong. It's like, I shouldn't do this because it's bad, or I shouldn't do this because this isn't loving. I shouldn't do this because if I was a really spiritual person, I wouldn't have given that person the finger in the traffic or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's not what spiritual people do. And the truth is, I'll stop doing that if I realize it doesn't work. You know, it's not going to bring me peace. It's not going to create any kind of peace in my experience. It's not going to increase the ideal peace in my life. So I'm going to stop doing it because it doesn't work. I'm not going to stop doing it because it's bad or because I shouldn't do it. So every time I remind myself that when I make it up like somebody else has to change in order for me to feel good about myself, I need to just be with that thought so that I'll start to move away from it. Or if I do try it, then I won't be so upset if it doesn't work or if it does work. You know what I'm saying? You can, because I'm telling you, the person that lets you control them is as much reinforcing your erroneous perception as the person who, in a way more than the person who doesn't. Because the person who doesn't is letting you know that you don't have the power to control another person, but you do have the power to control yourself. So it throws you back to your own mind. Then you go, okay, I got to change my mind about this if I want to have any peace. That's that's the conclusion you come to. You know, I got to change my mind about this if I want to have any peace. I have to look at this another way, where if the other person pretends, which I think is the biggest illusion about special love relationships. Because what happens in a special love relationship is for a while, both people in the relationship totally pretend like the other person really has power over them. That to me is like the biggest deception in that regard. All of a sudden, you know, what you feel seems to matter so much, what you want seems to matter so much. And so you really get to thinking like you really have this power over this other person to get them to do what you want them to do, or they really care about your feelings or whatever. But if they decide to remove that meaning, you know, because they're the one giving you the power, they're the one allowing you to have that influence, then you freak out. Because you fall into that illusion like you really do have that power. So you really have to watch it in a relationship to me. I think in a relationship is where people are least likely to encourage people to express themselves in terms of who they really are. But that's really what you need to do to keep from falling into that illusion.
Well, it just seems to me that I don't even have control over myself or anyone else, my thoughts. I mean, I know I have a willingness.
Right.
But boy, yeah, I mean, as much as I say I'm willing, I'm amazed. I mean, the thought of even having control over someone else is so, like, beyond. Because I just have a difficult enough time remembering to control my own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, at times I thought, gosh, do I really have control over this? I mean, it does feel sometimes like the ego is just,
well, that's
so
what,
much
what,
more powerful.
I think lesson two is like the ultimate lesson. The lesson two is I give everything that I see all the meaning that it has for me. To me, that's my favorite one out of all of them, because I feel like if a person can get that one, they have the key to happiness. That's the key. We have to understand that we're not responding to things directly. We're always responding to our interpretation of it. It's our interpretation that's upsetting us. It's not the thing. And so for me to pretend that I can't change my interpretation is just simply me not being lazy and not being willing to take responsibility, you know, or acting like my mind is just on automatic pilot and I don't have any control over it. There's some things that are so deeply ingrained that, yeah, I have a reaction to them before I even realize it, right? Okay, but that's just something that I've interpreted a certain way and given meaning to so long and so much and so consistently that I just have an automatic reaction like that. But that reaction started from my own programming. It started from me telling myself that all the time. So the way for me to change that is to tell myself something else. And that's what a lot of times when in teaching this, people will say, well, you know, I just say, well, how do I change my mind? You know, and I go, there's 1,122 pages of how you change your mind. But you got, and this is just one way, and you can do it many other ways. But I'm just saying that there's no way to change your mind without doing the work. There's no way to change your mind without, you know, really investing some energy. So it'll never happen through 1 hour a week in the class. It just ain't going to happen that way. You know, it's never going to happen that way. And so a lot of times people get disillusioned because they'll come to a class and then everything doesn't change. When primarily what the class is for is to give us an opportunity to be supported in the new thought system and to not be alone in what we're trying to do. But none of that takes the place of the individual work. I've never, ever seen a person that actually read the course and studied the course that did not go through miraculous changes of consciousness and in their relationships. That's one of the advantages of having taught it to almost 25 years, is that I've had a chance to see literally thousands of people pass before me, and I've seen people who've made miraculous changes, and I've seen some people who don't seem to make any changes at all. When you really get to know them and you really communicate, you find that one of them is really reading and studying and trying to apply it, and the other one is analyzing it. The other one is just analyzing and trying to figure out what it's saying and what it means. But they're not actually applying the ideas at all. They're trying to analyze it to decide if I'm going to be willing to apply the idea, you know. And same thing with me. It's like, even if you don't understand what you're reading, if you keep on, it's like somehow or another you've signaled to your higher self that you're really ready to have a different reality, that you're really ready to do it differently. And the reason why forgiveness is such a powerful foundation of the course for me is because, you know, I know that there are going to be, I'm so programmed that there are going to be times that I am going to react before I actually think, you know, because the programming is so intense. Okay, but if I forgive myself, then that's simply, okay, I gave it a good shot, and I'm going to get another chance to give it a good shot. Okay, Earl, you gave it a good shot. Okay, next time that comes up, see if you cannot do it the next. That's it. It's no more deeper than that. But we won't do that. We'll go, oh, my God, I should have been able to not get mad at that person that time, and da-da-da-da-da, you know. And then we beat ourselves up, increase the ego fearful thought in our mind 1,000-fold in the name of being spiritual. Because I'm mad at myself because I wasn't as spiritual as I wanted to be in that situation. That's just another ego trick. The Course says when you can get to the point that you can not get upset about getting upset, or not condemn yourself for getting angry, or not condemn yourself for feeling guilty.
He said
that's when you're transcending your ego. It's not about trying to make sure you never have an ego thought because you'd never be here. He said, you know, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have an ego thought. It's about having ego thoughts, but not judging yourself, condemning yourself, seeing them as what they are, tricks to make you forget that you're loving, seeing them as calls for love, seeing them as calls for help. And then if I want to punish myself, I'm going to seek out people in situations who do not reinforce my belief system. That's another one that I see is really common, is that people have studied the truth, but they are constantly form relationships with people who have not the slightest desire to wake up. And then they wonder why they don't go anywhere. You know what I'm saying? Because usually they're in some kind of debate or constantly in an argument, or the person's irritating them, or they're irritating the other person, or they're butting heads. And that's just another way to keep myself from having peace, because I don't think I deserve peace, because I feel guilty, because I was taught I was sinful and guilty, going back to when I was born. You know, it's like we land on the planet and the first thing we get, like I got as a Southern Baptist, was you're born in sin. So the first idea you get is you're somehow inherently flawed, right? And your thought is created. It's going to create your reality. It's going to create your perception. So you start off as a child believing that something is wrong with you. Then you manifest it from the time you're a child in terms of conflicts, dramas, sickness, accidents. And we wonder where they come from. And the Course says it comes from that root idea that somehow or another we're not whole, we're not complete, we're not perfect, we're not unconditional love. Because in this world, that's what we're taught in one form or another, is that we have those imperfections and we have those flaws. So the purpose of the Course is to give us new interpretations of ourselves that totally gets rid of the whole idea of sin and guilt. So the most important idea in the whole book is the idea of innocence, our innocence. It says that if you could accept the idea of your innocence, that there is not one area of your life that wouldn't be healed. It's like people are trying to work on, like, how can I figure out what to do with my boyfriend? What can I figure out what to do with my child? How can I handle my financial situation? What am I going to do on my job? And they don't realize that all those problems are coming out of a basic idea that they're guilty and that they're not innocent. So the Course is like trying to get us to see that peace that I'm looking for in that situation is going to come from me going to my own mind, realizing I got some erroneous ideas about myself, and then giving it up to God, giving it up to the Holy Spirit, giving it up to the universe. And that's the difference with the ego, is the ego says, I see something outside of me that's upset me, and I'm going to try to change that person, place, or situation. The conscious being goes, I couldn't even see that flaw in you unless it was in my own mind. Because I can only see your ego through my ego. I can only see my fear, your fear through my fear. I can only see your selfishness through the selfish thought that's in my own mind. So what you're really doing is witnessing back to me a thought I have in my mind. So if I was really conscious, I wouldn't say a word to you anyway. I would just realize I needed to have that thought corrected in my own mind. And then I would give it up to my right mind, which of course calls the Holy Spirit, the part of me that does know the truth, and let that part of me correct the situation. But the average person doesn't even believe there is a Holy Spirit or higher self or higher power. It's another one of those things we give lip service to that sounds really cool to say, I'm going to give it to God. But if people really be honest with themselves, to most people that's the same as saying I'm doing absolutely nothing about it. The best thing that ever happened to me when I first started studying this book was it helped me get that I had a bit more belief in God or a higher power than the man in the moon. It was just something I was taught to say I believed in. Because the book was always asking me to handle things as if the higher power actually existed. And I would always find it, whenever that happened, I would go, I'm still trying to figure out how I was going to do it all by myself. And that's how I knew that I was just serving, I was just giving lip service to the idea that there really is something that's greater than me that actually can intervene and give instruction and help me. So the course is really about getting people in touch with their own inner guide. It's not really about you being educated to the point that you can do something else on your own all by yourself because now you're smarter. And that's why it's such a challenge, especially for the Western mind. Because over here, it's all about as much as I can do autonomously, as much as I can do on my own, the wiser I am, the stronger I am, you know, the more I got my act together. So our whole programming is about doing it by yourself. Okay, so if our programming is about doing it by ourselves, then we don't realize that the outer is going to reflect my consciousness, and I have a consciousness of I got to do it by myself, then I wonder why I never get any help, or why I never draw assistance to myself. Well, I don't draw any assistance to myself because I think I got to do it on my own. So the minute you go, I got to do it on my own, then you end up doing it on your own. And then we call it, I'm struggling, why don't people help me, I don't know why I have to do this by myself. Well, get honest with yourself. You believe you by yourself, and you believe you think you have to do it by yourself. So the universe is just reflecting back to you that idea. So there's a part in the course where he talks about why this is such a challenge for the ego is because it keeps presenting us with things that we can't do by ourselves. And it's purposely written that way. That it constantly presents you with stuff that you go, I don't know how in the hell I'm going to do that. You know, I don't know how to have peace 100% of the time. I don't know how to love people all the time. I don't know how to do this unconditionally. You know, all of a sudden you're being hit with the fact that you can't do this by yourself. And he says that once you try to do something that you can't do by yourself, then the Course says, then you're no longer by yourself. Because the mere idea that you can't do it alone, like you said, I can't do this alone, is actually a request for assistance. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? So if I'm presented with something that I can't do by myself, then it immediately opens me up to, I want help. Oh, the universe says, all right, that's what that could. Now help arrives in the form of books or people or synchronicities. But we don't realize the more you go, the more you focus on things that are just a little bit beyond what you can do, the more help you get. The more you only focus on what you think you can do by yourself, the more you're doing everything by yourself. So I'm always trying to reach for that next level of love that's just beyond what I think I'm capable of coming up with on my own. And then I watch the universe send people in situations in to support me. Does that make sense? So that's where a lot of us are at right now, where we really having to make that choice of, do I want to continue to do this by myself? Or am I really willing to learn how to let the universe come in and be a part of this? Anybody else want to share anything?
Yeah. Going from what you said, what's your name?
Julie,
okay. It seems to me like when I was watching you talk about, you know, preferring to be angry and resentful versus preferring to love. That it's important to stay checked into how I'm feeling and realize that I actually prefer the buzz of discontent, of holding a grudge.
Thank you.
And so, like last night, it was a struggle with the waitress that we had. Perfect example, don't you think? Mm-hmm. What was her name? Bitch something?
Bitch Jones.
Bitch Pharma. Actually, bitch teacher. And I realized that my first, she came out and she had such a need to be right. I wanted to order a slice of pizza. Mm-hmm. And she's like, we don't do slices. And I'm like, well, last time I was here, I ordered a slice. No, you didn't. You know, she's telling me I didn't order a slice. And I was like, well, I was going to, you know, there's the bartender over there. He's the one that's serving to me. Do I got to call him over here? I mean, I was almost engaged at that. And I was like, oh, whoa, okay. You know, hold that back. Mm-hmm. And I started to realize, though, in my mind right away, I was like, you know, definitely judging her, pissed off at her, and totally separating myself from her. And, but I had to realize, whoa. There's a feeling of loving and connecting that's growing in me. It's soft. It's tender. It's not overwhelming and overpowering, but it's like a little fire that I want to tend. But then there's this automatic way of meeting the world that's years of building up that habit pattern. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and I had to work with it and choose, how do I want to feel? And I didn't get to the point of, you know, loving her right off the bat, but I did at least step back and go, this feeling sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one choosing to hold the grudge against this
woman. Bingo.
And
bingo.
By the end, my stretch was, it's like almost once I made that, she was bending over backwards. Did you notice?
Mm-hmm.
And she brought us out really nice to-go containers. And at the end, and I double-tipped her at the end as a stretch for me to, like, really put it out there that I'm giving to myself. But it seems like the key is to really be aware of my feelings and to realize that that what I want is this new feeling of love more than this old feeling of...
Exactly. And that flows perfectly with today's lesson. Notice when you owned it and you decided that you needed to change your interpretation so that you could have peace, she miraculously became another waitress.
Mm.
You know, and there are going to be some times that the person won't miraculously become another person, but at the same time, just your choosing for peace is still going to work better for you. And that's what I've seen, too, over and over and over again. It's like when I find myself having a temptation to attack, when I have a temptation to use this the plan that doesn't work. Okay, this waitress was different than I'd be enjoying my lunch right now.
Mm-hmm.
My ego loves that plan. So if I can just get her to speak or act, like I said, if I can just get her to speak or act differently, then I'm going to be safe. Now, notice that the first thing that comes to my mind is not me changing my mind, it's me changing her mind.
Right.
And this is exactly what it's saying right now. If she was different, I'd be safe. So another situation that would be better if I could get her to be different than I'd be happy. And he says, surely you can see this is in strict accord with the ego's basic doctrine. Seek but do not find. Because what could more surely guarantee that you will not find happiness than to channel all your efforts in searching for it where it's not? And he says, God's plan for happiness works simply because by following God's direction, you seek for happiness where it is, within. But if you are to succeed, as God promises you will, you must be willing to seek where the happiness and healing really is, and the key word is only. He says, otherwise your purpose is divided. You will be tempted to follow two plans for happiness that are diametrically opposite. What are the two plans for happiness that are diametrically opposite? One is that you need to change in order for me to be happy. The other one is I need to change in order to be happy. So most people are trying to follow the two plans at the same time, which would be, I'm going to change the waitress and I'm going to take responsibility. And we don't think about that one, too. Like, okay, I will take responsibility that I do have something to do with this that's happening with the waitress. But I'm also going to get that waitress to change, and if she'll treat me better, then I'll be happy. So he says, when you follow the two opposite plans at the same time, he says, the result can only bring confusion, misery, and a deep sense of failure and despair.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm feeling confusion, if I'm feeling misery, what I try to remind myself is, it's not what this person is doing. I'm trying to follow two plans. So in my mind, I go, okay, girl, you're trying to do the two plans. Where the old me would have went, what is it about this person's behavior I need to alter? Now my mind goes, oh, you feel miserable? You're trying to follow two diametrically opposite plans for happiness. I love that. That now my mind is saying just the opposite of what I would be entailed, you know, what I would usually say. You know, and to realize that for me to go, I need to change myself and I need to change you, it's still going to produce misery. Because I'll still do that. Go, okay, you're right, I do need to change, but I'm also going to get you to change too. And he's saying, no. That your happiness is going to come only from your own change of mind. Period.
Is that lesson
50? This is lesson 71. Okay, then your ego, which is the old way of thinking, what it's going to do is give you every justifiable reason why you should still continue to try to get everybody else to change. So that part of the mind is going to say, well, you know, you can't let people run all over you, da 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 da, you know, you can't do that. So of course, you know, it's okay for you to set boundaries for yourself. It's okay for you to say, hey, you know, I'm not gonna do this. You can't do that. But even if I do those things, I still want to remember that the only reason why this situation is even presenting itself to me in the first place is there's something in my consciousness that created, you know, bitch karma.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Well, something. Why did she come to my table?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, why am I drawing these kind of relationships to me? That's the thing I always want to get back to, is that the situation wouldn't even be showing up if it wasn't for something in my own consciousness that's drawing it to me. Now, once I've actually created it, then I can handle it any way I want to, but I need to keep coming back to it came from my consciousness. It came from my mind. It came from my consciousness. It came. I might be telling you, no, I'm not going to see you anymore. Don't call me anymore. I'm leaving the restaurant. I want, could you please get another waitress for me? See, I don't care about doing that kind of stuff. I'm not, it doesn't mean because I'm trying to be spiritual that I'm going to sit up there and be abused. No, that's what people don't get. It's like, no. I've created this illusion. I'm going to deal with it as peacefully as I possibly can, but I never want to be fooled by any of my actions into thinking that I'm the victim of something that's happening outside of me, even if I'm acting like it is.
Right.
I'm still going back to this situation would not be happening if I was not following two plans, if I was not at some level had some grievance, some fear, if at some level my lack of love for myself created that and drew it to me. Not to beat myself up, but to empower myself, because I need to empower myself, and I'm not empowering myself if I say it's being caused by somebody outside of me. Yeah, brother, you.
I'm hearing you, but it's just like I'm having conflicts with when you do the. It's all internal.
Uh-huh.
A lot of my issues happen when I go to work. It's like, why am I here? You know, I'm in a job. I don't care so much for, but.
Okay.
I do have a peace of mind when I'm there alone, but at the same time, it's just the idea that just. I reevaluate the day, and then it's always based on I have some kind of anger issues of dealing with it. You know, then I always remember what my grandfather said. All I want to do is have a peace of mind. And it's like, you know, I'm struggling with how do I make those personal changes. And I never look, I don't look at the outside that much anymore. It's more like it's that internal struggle. I look at myself and like, am I being loving? And, you know, of course, someone pissed me off, and the first thing I do speak my peace, and then I go. But then at the same time, it's like, wait a minute, I could, you know, like you said that earlier. But at the same time, it's like, it's almost like that. The person's no longer the issue, it's how you handle the situation.
Yeah, and it's exactly, what's such a trip is that, I learned through the course to phrase it differently. Like, I'll say stuff like, you know, man, I'm really making myself mad about this.
That's exactly
what you see what I'm saying. Instead of saying somebody pissed me off, I go, Earl, you really pissing yourself off.
That's
about
good.
It.
That's good.
You know, and yeah,
emotionally, you're being honest.
Yeah, but I'm still angry. Man, I'm making myself so mad. You know, I'm making myself want to kick dirt. You know, it's like as long as I own that I'm the one making myself feel that way, even if it's something that appears to be negative, I'm still empowering myself. I'm still. Actually, that emotion, to have a thought and mix it with feeling and emotion, that's positive. You feel in the anger, right?
Yeah.
But you own it, you know?
Yeah.
And then the Course says that, then I try to remember whenever I'm mad at somebody, I try not to use the word I would typically use. I try to use the phrases that the Course says the word means. For instance, he says, anger is nothing but the result of trying to make someone feel guilty, and that anger is also somebody not acting out your script. That the reason why you're mad is there's a script you've written for this situation, and it's not happening. So instead of just saying, I'm angry, I'll go, oh, I'm upset because this person not acting out my script. I'm really mad because they're not acting. And when you say it like that, you'll see how ludicrous that is.
But then if it's yourself, then...
And I'm mad at me because I'm not acting out my script.
That's
so,
what I mean. That's
So you got to get to the point that you let go of the scripts for yourself other than the script of peace. So, but still, you owning it. You still owning that, you know, because the Course says to blame yourself is the same as blaming somebody else. It's no difference. For me, most people that start studying the truth and they'll take the focus off of everybody else and then they'll start blaming themselves. They'll stop blaming everybody else and they'll start blaming themselves. And blame and responsibility are two different things.
Yeah.
And people get that confused. You know, if you truly taking responsibility, you feel more peace. And that's one of the ways you can tell. If I'm really taking responsibility, then I feel more peace. If I go, you know, I'm responsible for this experience that I'm having with this waitress. I'm the one that's creating this situation that I'm going through right now with this waitress. Okay, really don't have anything to do with her. It's really me. Okay, I'm going to kind of cool out a little bit. But if I'm blaming myself, it goes something like, boy, if I was really spiritual as I should be right now, I shouldn't even be creating this kind of stuff that I'm creating right now. You know, or, you know, you know, I created that waitress. You know, still that's good at some level, but you can tell by how you're feeling that you're still attacking yourself. So one of the things the Course says is that every time you have a negative, what you call a negative feeling in a situation, in the workbook he says, you should say, you know, I'm really angry at my mother right now. That thought is an attack upon myself. It's because your mind has already learned that it's not too smart to constantly attack yourself. So if I call it, what it is, then I'm working with myself, because then I can use all the years of programming.
So say that again.
But okay. Yeah. Okay. There are certain things that we've learned. What's a universal thing? Nobody likes to be wrong, right? We all want to be right. You know. Basically, people will tell you they don't want to hurt themselves. They don't want to attack themselves, right? Most people have been programmed not to do things that don't work. If it doesn't work, don't do it, right? So the Course uses that to our advantage. It'll say stuff like, the reason why you don't want to attack is because attack doesn't work. It doesn't get you what you want. You want peace, attack's not going to get it. Okay? So instead of saying it's bad to attack, if I tell myself it doesn't work to attack, and that attack is not going to give me what I want, then all the years of programming that I've had about not doing what doesn't work kicks in, and my mind automatically starts to work against me doing that, because my mind has already been programmed. Don't do what works. I mean, if it doesn't work, don't do it. If it doesn't work, don't do it. So the Course says that the problem is we have taught ourselves that attack works. That's why the first thing that people do is they get mad, because they somehow think if I get angry, then I'm going to get the thing to turn out the way that I want it to get.
It's a way of their controlling you.
Right.
Well, I don't want them to be mad at me.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That we believe attack works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why everybody's doing it. And then we fake each other out like it does. Because if the person really means something to us, we have a tendency to go, okay, and cave in and give in, which makes them think that they really have the power to control you, and it also makes you think that you don't have any power. So the most empowering thing you can possibly do is to tell yourself that attack doesn't work, attack doesn't work, attack doesn't work. And so when I feel that temptation to attack, what you do is you breathe. It's like as soon as you get ready to go off, you go... Or if you're really smart, you just get up and walk or leave. You know, don't give in to the temptation to attack.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more advanced you get spiritually, the faster it comes back on you. That's one of the reasons why I can't do it now. I was telling somebody the other day, I can't afford to hold a grievance. I can't afford to play any of the games that I see most people still play. Because after you've been on the path for a long time, you clear out a lot of stuff. And so your thoughts manifest real quick. There's not that you said something crappy and then you get the results 6 months later. So you don't see the connection between when you initiated that and when you got it. It's like now if I get in my ego, it's immediately I get it back. I get the ego back. It's not 5 minutes later. It's not 30 minutes later. You know what I'm saying? It's like wham. So the once you see that, you go. Because you don't want it to come back, because it comes back, it doesn't just come back like that. It comes back like this. It comes from every direction. It always comes back multiplied. You know, so it's real important, I think, to, like he says here, I want to make sure I finish this. He says, how can you escape all this? Very simply, the idea for today is the answer. Only God's plan for salvation will work. There can be no real conflict about this because there's no possible alternative to God's plan that will save you. God's is the only plan that is certain in its outcome. God's is the only plan that must succeed. So let's practice recognizing this certainty today. What certainty? That only the plan of truth is going to work. He said, let us rejoice that there is an answer to what seems to be a conflict with no resolution possible. All things are possible to God. Salvation must be yours because of God's plan, which cannot fail. So begin the two longer practice periods for today by thinking about today's idea, realizing that today's idea contains two parts, each making an equal contribution to the whole. Here are the two parts. God's plan for your happiness will work. That's the first part. Other plans won't. That's the second part. I love that. The plan of the truth gives us will work. No other plan will work. There is no other answer but love. There is no other answer but truth. Anything other than that, the Course says it won't work. He says, don't allow yourself to become depressed or angry at the second part that your plan won't work. It's inherent in the first part, which is that only God's plan will work. And in the first, knowing that only God's plan will work is your full release from all your own insane attempts and mad proposals to free yourself. He says, out of your own insane attempts and mad proposals to free yourself, they have led to depression and anger. So now when I feel depression and anger, I try to remember to tell myself, oh, you know what I'm doing? I'm experiencing my own mad proposal to free myself. Oh, I'm angry because I'm trying to follow my own insane plan. That's why I'm not really angry at the waitress. I'm angry at the fact I'm using my own insane plan. Only God's plan will work. He says, remembering this, let's devote the remainder of the extended practice periods to asking God to reveal God's plan to us. See, that's what I'm saying about the Course in Miracles. Now, notice that as part of the workbook lesson, it said, ask God. See, that's the part that kicks butt. Because, see, I'm all ready to try, okay, now how am I going to do this on my own? And the Course says, no, ask your Creator to reveal its plan to you. Ask your Creator very specifically. Ask your Creator, what would you have me do in this situation? I got the waitress in front of me. What would you have me do? Where would you have me go? What would you have me say? And to whom? And that's what I try to remember now. Okay, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? Where do you want me to go? That's what I try to ask all the time when I find myself getting upset. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? It's amazing that if you can take a minute to do that, if you can have the presence of mind to do that when you're getting upset, you'll also have the presence of mind to remember the truth. They both go together. If you can give yourself that 10-second pause that you go, okay, all right, what do you want me to do in this situation? But right now I want to run over with my car. What do you want me to do? You know, right now I want to go totally off. I want to throw a book. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? If you can get that much sanity, something from God, which is something that you've studied, which is something that you've read, which is something that you focused on is the truth, it is going to be revealed to you if you can take that second, that's just that pause in that situation. Then it says, give God full charge of the rest of the practice period. Let God tell you. See, again, acting like there really is a God is ridiculous. So let God tell you what needs to be done by you and his plan for your happiness. God, now check this out. God will answer in proportion to your willingness to hear God's voice. See, that's a key sentence. I'm not gonna hear the voice that's guiding me any louder than my willingness to hear it. If I'm addicted to getting you to change in order for me to be happy, then I am not willing to listen to God, because that's not God's plan. So the minute that I want to change you, I'm not going to hear the guidance, because my desire to change you is my refusal to listen to the guidance.
It's much greater.
Yeah, it's much greater. So I'm so busy listening to the way I want to deal with it, which is to get you straight, right, that I'm not hearing what my inner self is trying to tell me, because it's not going to be any louder than my willingness to hear. And one of the most powerful things that's happening in my personal experience of doing this now is that the other voice is louder now. It's like the voice that tells me, breathe, cool it, take responsibility, don't attack, because you know why? Because you don't want to attract more of this person. You don't want to be bound to this person. You don't want to create this situation over and over again. Well, if you resonate on the same level that they're on, then you're going to be bound to each other. So if she's acting crappy and I'm acting crappy, what do we have in common? Crappy. So our crappy consciousness is going to create a crappy reality, and guess who's going to be in that crappy reality? Both of the crappy people. Regardless of whether I feel justified by doing it, I'm still attacking her. I don't care how justified I feel. Well, she didn't treat me right, so I'm going to go for it with her. Well, she's doing it with me, so we are bound, right? So I create a vibration that just attracts more and more conflict and attack. Where if I can maintain my peace and be defenseless, then there's nothing for her energy to use to increase. And guess what? I'll have that one encounter with her, and I won't have an encounter like that again as much. That's the part. If you can deal with the fact that, yes, I had that encounter. I did not attack her. I didn't use the ego's plan. Yeah, I had that encounter. It's over. It's done. Now, because I didn't feed that energy by attacking, then I didn't recreate that. I didn't put any more energy into the universe to attract to me another waitress like that. Your ego is going to say, you punked out, you should have got them straight, you shouldn't have let them say that to you, blah, 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 blah. Because the Course says the ego is a part of the mind that believes that conflict is how you know you are alive. So for a lot of people, unless their life is full of drama and conflict, they don't even know they exist. They're so miserable that the only stimulation they have is conflict. They wouldn't even know they was alive if they weren't conflict. battling a problem or struggling against something. They wouldn't even know they had a life. That's their entertainment. A lot of people, that drama is their entertainment. You take away my drama, I don't know what to do with my time. If I'm not fixing something, if there's something broken, if it's not something I'm worried about, if it's not something I'm trying to change, then I don't know what to do with my time. My job is to fix me and everything else every second. It never dawns on me that the purpose of my life could be to experience the blessings and the gifts of God. Mm-hmm. That really my day should be so full of wonderful, loving things to do that I can't even get around to all the cool stuff. That's the other reality that is happening more and more in my experience, where it's just more and more love coming in, and I'm trying to learn how to let the love in and time manage love. Wow. Yeah. It's really trippy. Because it definitely has switched from letting Earl figure out how he's going to deal with all the different issues that he's got to deal with today and fix himself, and he's all messed up, and everybody's all messed up, and the world's all messed up, and how can we fix all this messed up stuff? You know, so let me read, let me study, because it's all messed up. You know what I'm saying? And so I got to do something. And I'm messed up about it. I'm the one that's most messed up, you know? And so my life was full of justification of that idea. It was always something coming up to show me that I was somehow not enough, because I believed I wasn't. And then through doing the course, asking, what do you want me to do? Well, in most cases, the voice will say, shut the hell up. That's what I want you to do. Be quiet. That's what I want you to do nothing. That's what I want you to do. I want you to breathe. That's what I want you to do. I want you to go meditate. Go walk in the park. Go study. Do the best you can, then let it go. Don't attack. Realize it's in your own mind. Get lots of instruction. You get lots of instruction. Now do I have the spiritual power to do nothing? I didn't realize that how much strength it took to do nothing. Mm. To just go, I'm not going to react. I'm not going to defend. You know, the ego's like, what should I do? And then the Course says, no, it's not about doing, brother. It's about not doing. You've been doing. That's why your life is so messed up now, because of all the stuff you've been doing. So you need to undo. It's an undoing. It talks about that, how it's an undoing and how it doesn't take as long to undo as it did to do. You know, to unroll a ball of string doesn't take nearly as long as it does to roll one up. And that's what people forget, is that, yeah, even if it took you 3 years to get your life to the point that it was peaceful, that's nothing. Mm-hmm. Compared to how many years you were in total conflict. But we're in the McDonald's generation, right? So now everything's supposed to happen like that. And if it doesn't happen in 5 minutes, we out of here. You know what I'm saying? I'm supposed to get rid of, 30 years worth of negative programming in 2 days. And if it doesn't happen in 2 classes, this stuff doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? You can see it. You can see it in yourself. You see it. I see it in everybody around me. You know, it's like I want all the rewards of what the Course is talking about, but I don't want to do any of the work. And that's the ego trick. Don't fall for that. So anyway, I'm almost at the end of this, actually. This one, I actually got through it. Oh, I love what he says. He says, God will answer in proportion to your willingness to hear his voice. Refuse not to hear. That's an interesting sentence. Refuse not to hear. The very fact that you're doing the exercises proves that you have some willingness to listen. Your willingness to listen because you're doing the exercises is enough to establish your claim to God's answer. That's what I was talking about earlier, that I noticed that if I would just have the willingness to do the exercise, he says, well, that's enough. And it didn't say I had to master the exercise. It just said I had to have the willingness to do the exercise. Well, if I'm sitting up here reading it with you all and going through it with you all, isn't that showing a willingness? And he says, that's enough to claim the answer. So in the shorter practice periods, tell yourself often during the day, God's plan for my happiness and only God's plan for my peace will work. Be alert to all temptations to hold grievances today, and respond to the temptation to hold a grievance with this form of today's idea. Holding grievances is the opposite of God's plan for my peace. Only God's plan will work. Try to remember today's idea 6 or 7 times an hour. See, I mean, come on. How many times do we remember that 6 or 7 times an hour? Which is nothing, really.
I know.
6 or 7 times an hour, right. You know why I don't? Because I'm busy using the other plan. I'm busy all day long trying to fix something out there. When I get that car, I'm going to feel better. When I lose that weight, I'm going to feel better. When I get that next special relationship, I'm going to feel better. When I go to the movie, see, that's my plan. You say, I'm about the other plan. That's why I don't remember to say, only God's plan for my peace will work. What's God's plan for my peace? Well, for me to recognize that seeking to change outside myself is not going to be the answer. Then I need to start asking Spirit, what should I do? Where should I go? What should I say? Then it says here, there could be no better way to spend a half a minute or less than remember the source of your happiness and see it where it is. So if we walked out of here today, and here's the course's definition of a grievance. I used to think a grievance was just like, just only you did something wrong and I'm upset with you. I did something wrong. But he says a grievance, the minute I say if this were different, I would be happy. That's a grievance. Just as soon as I go, if this were different, I would be happy. He says that's a grievance. Mm-hmm. Now the ego says, oh, you're holding a grievance. You're a bad person. Beat yourself up. Oh, God, if you was really spiritual, you wouldn't be holding a grievance. Or it go, man, how can I pull this off? How can I pull this off? Of course I want some things to be different in order for me to be happy. So then you get into that place where you see, I can't do this by myself. Bingo! That's why it says right here, ask God what you should do. See, it always loops back to you can't do it by yourself. And that's why a lot of times this book gets totally tossed. Because the more popular self-help books, if you read them, it's all about what you can do on your own. And the ego loves that. You can fill a class. I often say, you know, I could teach stuff a lot easier than the Course in Miracles and have a lot more people around if I would do stuff that was more pleasing to the ego. But it doesn't work. That's why I don't do it. Because it doesn't work. It's just helping reinforce the same erroneous idea in people, which is that they're on their own by themselves, got to figure it out, they got to do it. And people like that, but it doesn't work. And then they wonder why they keep going through the same stuff over and over again. Where over and over again with the Course in Miracles, I've seen that miracles seem to happen, where things just seem to resolve themselves in ways I wouldn't have never dreamed of and never figured out. And that's proof enough for me. Yes, yeah, so I don't know how, I don't know why, but I just know if I'll do this, even if it's half-heartedly, whatever I'm going through, somehow or another, it starts to correct itself. And that's enough proof for me. So that's what I would invite you all to do today. It's just the next time you get ready to get upset, have whatever reaction you need to have. Don't be in repression about it. But as soon as you can, remind yourself that that's the plan that doesn't work, that you're making your happiness dependent on something or someone speaking or acting differently. He said, that's all I want you to realize. Because if you keep realizing that, your mind is going to automatically stop doing it. You don't have to worry about it. Like you were saying, how do I program my mind? If you remind yourself that that's insane, your mind is going to stop anyway. It isn't. It just remind yourself, it's not going to work. It's not going to work for me to set it up where if my mate acted differently, then I would be happy. It's not going to work for me to beat myself up because I get mad. That's the same error too. When you do get mad, just say, this is my call for love, this is my call for help, this is my call for healing. When you cuss somebody out, that's my call for love, that's my call for help, that's my call for healing. When you lose it, that's you calling for love. It's okay for you to call for love. Why is it okay for us to see what everybody else do as something we should forgive and see as a call for love, but then we won't apply that to ourselves? That doesn't make any sense, but we do it all the time. We'll think I should overlook what you do and see what you do differently, but as soon as I make a mistake, I hang myself out to dry. But of course, I said, no, you should be the same way about you, too. But your mind will automatically apply it to you if you start applying it to everybody else. And that's the cool part. There's no way I can see what you're doing as a call for love, Robin, over and over again, and my mind not start to apply that to me when I get upset. I don't even have to worry about that. So everybody around us, the Course is telling us, is giving us an opportunity to reprogram our mind so that it will apply these ideas to us. And this is the best place in the world. If you want to learn how to do that, if you want to learn how to look at insane stuff and see it as a call for help, that's why we were dropped here. I mean, we're in a very bad school being on planet Earth. We are souls who have decided to learn how to see everything that's happening as some kind of a call for God, a call for help. And we get a chance to see it on TV and in the news. We get a chance to practice on people we don't even know. So that when it gets to the people we do know, we're already used to doing it. You know, if I can see the people that died in that disaster correctly, then when it happens to somebody in my family, it will be easier for me to do it because I've already practiced on people that I didn't have an emotional attachment to. And that's what all these people, that's what the newspaper's doing, that's what the TV is doing, that's what all that's doing. It's giving us a chance to practice on people we don't know.
That's great.
If people won't do it. He's like, no, I'm gonna bury my head in the sand. I'm pretending there wasn't a disaster that happened over there because it's an illusion. Mm. Yeah, it's an illusion. It's an illusion. But when your butt's swirling around in a big way, let's see if you can go. What is that? An illusion? It's like people are so good at seeing everybody else's stuff as an illusion. They're like, I'll be going through something, especially the truth students. They walk up to you and say, oh, you know, it's just an illusion. You're saying it because they don't have a doggone thing to do with you. That's all. You're not saying it because you're enlightened or because you changed your mind. You're saying it because it has nothing to do with you, which is great. It is an illusion. Now, can you say that when you lose your job or you break your leg or you find out you have a disease or you find out somebody, can you go, that's just an illusion then? Because I'm not impressed with you being able to call my stuff an illusion. That don't impress me at all. But if you can call yours an illusion, then I go, okay, to listen to this person because they're learning the right way to look at it. But that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you don't have fear. Because the Course says that's what an illusion is. An illusion is the fear, is the pain, is the separation. That's what's not real. Because God is real. Love is real. And so we get a chance to go out here today and see everything that's happened to us as a call for help. So if you can walk out here today and just go, man, that waitress was a call for God. If I could go and say, if I expect her to change, then I'm not going to be happy, and my happiness is not going to come from this person changing, even though I'm going to tell you what I like, and I will tell you what I appreciate you doing, I'm not going to hesitate to do that. I'm still going to tell you what I prefer, but if you're conscious, you won't make your happiness dependent on the person doing it. So I still might say, I appreciate that you put the toilet seat down. But I'm not going to give my peace up for the rest of the night because you left the toilet seat up. You know what I'm saying? But I'll let you know, but I'm not going to make my happiness dependent on it. So that's the point that I want to make about today. Be honest with your feelings, fear your feelings, but try to always get back to the thought that your happiness ultimately is not dependent on that outer thing happening. And the weird part about it, as soon as you can really do that, the outer thing seems to change. When you really do it, you can't fake it out, but if you can really get to the point that you don't lose your center and you really are okay if it happens and okay if it doesn't, it always seems to heal.
And what really helped me with the waitress was, talk about not doing it alone,
mm-hmm.
was that I was with Marina, a friend of mine, a partner in spiritual growth, sitting with me so I could actually verbalize it.
Mm.
It's harder to go through the experience alone and internalize all that. That takes a certain level of practice and mastery. But it really helped for me just to say it out to her, and she's not buying into me being a victim.
Right, right.
And it just allowed for that, by me saying it into that container, a little movement.
Mm. Mm.
And it's just a little bit, a little more.
It's amazing.
I've got a favorite word now. I just say, okay, that's, mm-hmm. okay, fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, the anger, and especially in...
do you repress
relationships?
Do you let yourself feel it, or do you pretend to yourself?
Sometimes I do. Okay. Sometimes I allow it to take hold too, and I do beat myself up after and say, why did I let myself?
Okay, so now your spiritual growth will come from feeling that feeling,
the pain,
and not beating yourself up and feeling that feeling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
That's what's going to take you to the next level.
Yes.
It's going to be, can I feel crappy innocently? Can I feel angry and not beat myself?
But when I participate in the anger, that's when the attack stuff starts.
Exactly.
When you're angry, get up. Okay.
I'm telling you, if you give me a call later. If you're on a spiritual path, you can't.
Yes.
It's going to escalate. Because
yes.
the ones you choose, the Course says, whoever's saner at the moment is the one that has the greatest responsibility. So when people jump on this path, mm-hmm. Well, I'm ready to be a spiritual person. All right, mm-hmm. great. But now you're going to have to be the one that's saner.
Right.
You're going to get the reward for that. But you can't pretend that you don't know what you know.
No,
so you've got to forgive yourself or to be horrible. You've got to learn how to forgive. You got to go, hey, I gave it a good shot. I didn't pull it off today. I thought I was going to be loving today, but I want to kill everybody. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. I gave it tomorrow, like she said, gone with the wind. Tomorrow is another day.
Why are you even talking about it today?
Yeah. So, love our friend. Thank you for coming today, even though the weather looked like it was going to be really strange and weird, and it didn't turn out better than we thought it would. Yeah, I know. You know me. I'm telling you now. It's all snowing, really icy. I kick back at the crib. I'm telling you. So. you know, divine love through all of us this year. May this year we recognize all of our prosperity and abundance, and may we just totally, completely release all the blocks to our awareness of prosperity and abundance. I also ask that we let go of our fear of having prosperity and abundance because we are afraid of what we might do if we have it. So sometimes we keep ourselves in lack because we are afraid of what we could do if we could bankroll our fantasies. Mm. So it's okay. So I'd like to say to the group, it's safe to be prosperous. It's safe to be prosperous. All right, and pass that around. Thank you, brother.
Amen.
I got some flyers over here for a relationship workshop that I'm going to do with Stephanie Padilla that we're putting together that's off the hook, that's totally different from anything that we've done. We really want to be different from what most people have done. And I got a flyer over there that explains it and everything about it. And I'd love for you to take one of those with you and think about doing that, because we're going to limit the number of people that's able to be a part of it. So really give that some thought. If you really, and it's not about romantic, okay, just romantic relationships. What we want this relationship to be about is how to maintain your peace and in any relationship situation. That's our focus. It's not about the love of thing. It's, even though it's going to be included, it's really about, like, the situation that he was in yesterday. Any situation, it's like, from a course perspective, what would be the best way to do it? And it's going to be about not just lecture. It's going to actually be about really taking having techniques that you can use in those situations to regain your center. So it's going to be a great one-day workshop. And that's on the 12th of February. And like I said, I got some flyers over there. And it'll be cool for anybody you know, like not just people that come to the course. I mean, it's anybody you know that may be interested in that, please share with them. They'll be able to. Yeah, but it's rooted in the course principles, but it's going to be done in a way that anybody could grasp it and take part in it. Yeah, so cool. All right, I appreciate y'all coming out.
Thank you,
Rob. You're welcome. I appreciate you.
It was timely.
Y'all dealt with the hard course.